stata di Steelers.
To partner with the National Football League to promote social justice initiatives and expand entertainment options. But many see the move as a betrayal of former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick. The billionaire has previously supported Cap by wearing his jersey and refusing to play the halftime Super Bowl show. Several players have responded to Jay-Z's move, including Carolina Panthers safety Eric Reed, who called Jay-Z a sellout. But the rapper argues it's time to move on from kneeling by taking real actions. Breaking this down is the City Lab staff writer who wrote The Roots of Jay-Z's Black Capitalism, Brenton Mock. Brenton, let's start with just this deal in general. What's Jay-Z getting out of this deal with the NFL? We know he's not hurting for money.
Roc Nation is partnering with the NFL. And there are a lot of people with various opinions about that.
Right.
What did you think when you first heard about them partnering?
Oh, man, I feel like this. I feel like, and we love Khaled. You know what
I'm saying? No
doubt. I feel like that was his stance. And I talk to him from time to time, and I respect him for taking his stance. I just feel like at this point, I know Jay personally has got to be some type of, thought out. I don't think he would just jump out. I wouldn't hope that he would do that. So until we see his actions, I don't think we should be able to judge until. Now, if we walk away and say, that ain't what we thought was going to happen, that'd be different. You know what I'm saying? But, like, we got to see. We got to have one foot in, because other than that, we on the outside as a culture.
Correct.
We don't have anybody in, and it's just like
radio. DJ.
One Nation, one station.
The Judge Joe Brown Show, presented by Valerie Denise Jones. Uncensored truth with a legal twist. Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 929-477-1167. Now, welcome your host, the celebrity consultant, Valerie Denise Jones.
Guys, good afternoon. Welcome to Friday. It's officially the weekend. I hope you are preparing for a great one. I know that I am, so I wish you warm wishes and plenty of wealth. That's all I think about all day. You're locked in to the Judge Joe Brown Show. I am Valerie Denise Jones, the one and only Valerie Denise Jones. You will find me always at Miss NS. ValerieDeniseJones.com. Go there or ValerieDeniseJones.com without the MS, and you will find out a plethora of things about me and the great things that me and this beautiful network is doing. Big shout out to Philo the Great holding us down. Amen. All right, guys, we are preparing now as I load today's audio clips. We're preparing for a great show, so I hope you got your pen, pad, and non-alcoholic libations, because we have got a lot of information to share with you. Jay-Z is doing his thing. Actually, a lot of people think that 2019 is his best year. They report that he has never, ever looked more wealthy, more rich. He looks more like a billionaire than ever. His company, Roc Nation, signed a huge mammoth-sized deal to produce entertainment for events including Super Bowl halftime, ensuring diverse acts for the show. Yes, a lot of people are pro Jay-Z and some are not. So we're going to discuss that today because it is the hottest topic of the week, and you know we are on it. Big shout out to all our international callers and listeners. Thank you guys so much on social media, all our social media family and friends and fans and haters. We love you all the same. Not really. I don't love the haters the same, my bad. But anyway, guys, please make sure that you share today's link during the show, that you're tweeting, voicing your opinions, comments, what have you. Let people know we are live. Let them know what you think, what's going on. Why? Because we are here every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 929-477-1167 is the number that should be tweeted when you tweet your comments. Let them know that we're here and they can call in and join the conversation. All right, guys, let's get this party started. Let's do it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, so much is made of the partnership between Roc Nation and the NFL. A lot of people weighed in on it, and it seems to be two different camps. Some people that think he did something that was going to be noteworthy, and some people did something, believe he did something that was self-centered. I personally am a big fan of Jay-Z's. I have watched what he has done socially and consciously. I've watched him work both up front and behind the scenes to change the narrative. And those are noteworthy. So I can't question what he's doing, much like I can't question what Colin Kaepernick did. What the thing that seemed interesting to me, they seemed to draw into two camps. And one, if you liked what Jay-Z was doing, you had to dislike Colin Kaepernick. And if you liked what Colin Kaepernick did, you had to dislike Jay-Z. I think both of those men deserve credit for what they've done and continue to do. My question has never been to question him. But I think, you know, people said, well, Colin Kaepernick took the settlement. What was he supposed to do? He couldn't. The most powerful man in the world stopped him, or in part was responsible for him not being able to get a job. A lot of NFL owners said, we're not going to risk Donald Trump calling us out on Twitter. So the president, in courts, we're not going to let him call the president of the United States and be deposed. The Mueller report couldn't even do that. So they'll be damned if a black athlete's going to do it. So I have no reason to question his motives. Much like Jay-Z, I have no reason to question his motives. He's been exemplary and done things that he did not have to do. I have every reason to question the motives of the NFL owners. You are talking about a group of men who believe things about black people, who believe things about the men and the people that they own. And to them, it's no, if I can own black men, I can rent one. There's no difference for them. Their motives have never, ever been in question. They know what it is. I want you to be silent. When they have black people, what they want from you is obedience and silence. That's what how you serve. If they don't need to have Jay-Z and the NFL have a partnership for social justice and entertainment, they talk to the people in power all the time. Many of them have had dinners and fundraisers for Donald Trump and been in his presence. They have been in mayor's presence. They've been in Jerry Jones, who owns the Dallas Cowboys. If he wants to get to the police chief on the line, he could do it. If they want to do something about what they saw as injustice, they could do it. They're with those people all the time. They give them money. They keep them employed. They get them elected. They don't need Jay-Z to have a conversation about social justice. But that's never been the conversation. What they want is silence. They want your quiet. They want you to be distracted. Anybody can own an NFL team. If you have the money, anybody could buy an NFL team. Why him? It's a lot of billionaires. What they want, what does he have that other people who have the billions of dollars necessary to buy a team, what does he have? Influence. What is influence for them? Silence. I want you to shut up and play, and I want the rest of the country to not be distracted, to keep doing what we do. We read a report earlier where it talked about the Super Bowl halftime was down significantly, and they believed in part because black people were not participating. That's what I need. You know why these owners are so good at this? Because they've been doing it forever, for decades. These are mostly 80 and 90-year-old white men who've learned how to deal with black people for a long time. This whole thing reminds me, there was an uprising in a plantation in Louisiana, Germantown. It was very successful. They got these people together, these slaves together, and they started going from plantation to plantation. What happened was somebody told on them. Somebody told them and gave the owners a head up, and they were able to stop that revolt, and they marched all the leaders of the revolt out. They beheaded them, and they left their heads on pikes for everybody floating down the river to see. They also brought the slaves out so they can watch what happens to somebody who displeases them. You know what happened to the man who helped them? He was rewarded. He died of old age. Both Colin Kaepernick and Jay-Z, they have something to say. The NFL uses both of those people for a narrative. This is what happens if you don't do what I want. This is what happens when you do. There is no doubt that both those men have been influential in a conversation that this country needs to have. And what the owners are doing is trying to stop them from having it. They don't want it to be had. What they want is for you to go back and watch their games and be quiet. They want silence and obedience. And this is the way they have always done it. It shouldn't be about what Jay-Z is doing or what Colin Kaepernick has done. I have no reason, nor do you, should you, have any reason to question their motives. Question the people who are involved on the other side. Question the people who are pulling the strings. Question the people who only want you to speak when you're talking in glowing terms. If I can get Donald Trump to come out to a fundraiser, I can talk to him about social injustice. If I can have the police chief in my luxury box, I can talk to him about police brutality. These people are locked into our communities. And the reason that sports has always been used as a drive for social change is because that's the only time they ever listen to us is when we're singing, dancing, jumping, or running. If you, I think that the NFL care as much about social justice as Donald Trump did about ASAP Rocky. What I want is your silence and your obedience and your money. And I want you to break your bodies in service of my entertainment. And then I want you to shut up. Silence is golden, and so are deals that are made with men of ill intent.
All right, guys, that's it. I hope you enjoy the audio clip. Again, you're listening to the Judge Joe Brown Show. I am Valerie Denise Jones, 929-477-1167. Please tell a friend who will tell a friend, and make sure during the show that you are tweeting or sending out messages to let everybody know that you are live, you are on. And later on, this entire episode will be on iHeart, so you can go there and listen to it again. All right, so what I'd like to do at this time, because I told you we are pressed for time because we have a lot of people who are interested in talking about today's topic, and the very first person, I'm going to open as Professor James Small, and I just want to read this one line before we welcome Professor Small, because I think that it's dynamic. I got it off of a website online, 50bowl.com, I think it was. Excuse me if that is not correct, but I think that that's the right reference. But anyway, this is how it reads. I wrote it down. Professor James Small is certainly not one to mince words, best known for serving up controversial outrages and slices of liberating powers of truth about Afrocentrism. Professor Small is a living legend, a researcher, Pan-Africanist, Black nationalist, and scholar. And it is an honor to have him here today. Big shout out to Maurice Duncan. He is the reason why Professor Small is with us today. So, how are you? Hello? Are you there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Hi. Happy Friday.
Hi. And greetings to the other brothers and sisters who are there on this call.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to the young man, and I don't know enough. You know, everybody seems to know what the details are behind Jay-Z's involvement with the NFL. I don't know what those details are. I don't know whether there is a contract or whether there's a discussion about a contract or what is the nature of it. I would like to speak to our reaction, which is so predictable when one of our people do anything that seems to be out of our reach. You know, we have about 70% of the NFL being African-American males. They didn't go on strike to support our brother. Many of them knelt with them. But they could close that whole thing down right now. Go on strike. Call it a day.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them we're not going to play.
I totally agree.
So if you're going to come down on Jay-Z that hard, I don't know what he's done to be cause this. Because sometimes we create controversy to call people out when we have other issues with those persons. I don't know if that's the case here. But I don't know enough, and I doubt if anybody else knows enough about whatever his arrangements or contracts or agreements is with the NFL. And I know that we do have the power and Black bodies on the NFL to close it down today. We've got the numbers. Nearly 70% of the players. If you feel as strong as you say you do, and I've heard some of you speaking out as I've tried to look at this topic, then walk out and close it down. Otherwise, we have to have another kind of discussion in our community. You know, we didn't beat up Brother Tappanek. He had to go to court and sue to get some of his money. That's appropriate, and he should get more, you know. But I doubt even if they let him back into that league on that field to play, maybe there'll be a principle that we seem to want very much. And that's what integration was about. We fought for a principle that was very destructive to us. wanting to be with them and in with them and on them. Move to another sector and take your skills and talent and make it pay in another way. You know, because time is
very short.
When you're in the athletic arena, I played football in college and high school, and that's not a long life, you know, because of the injuries and other things you're going to have to go through. So how much time would the brother have even if he went back? He may be more valuable to us not even being in that league, but really denouncing it for what it really is and try to encourage the other young black men that's in that league to take actions with the power of their numbers to transform that league to whatever degree they can. And then back to Jay-Z, I don't know a lot about him. I'm not a big sports fan. I'm not even a big music fan in that sense. But you hear of having kids and having young people and being out in the world as I am, I hear about all of them. And he does a lot of things that are seemingly good, and some of us make some critical mistakes, especially when you're dealing up there where your money forces you to have to deal predominantly with white money that has the powers. And so you're going to make critical mistakes, you know. So that's my take on it. I'm not ready to condemn or criticize anybody until I know all the details that is knowable for me to make an informed decision on whether he's made the best decision or whether he has betrayed the community, as so many people are saying. We're too quick to accuse our members of betrayal before we know what the motivation is and what the situation is. That's my take on it.
Yeah, and that's beautiful. Yeah, I would introduce articles and audio clips, but I guess for the sake of time, I'm just going to interject and just mention that the Washington Post, I'm just reading headlines, and then I'm going to open up General Jeff's mic as I look for the judge and then see who else is on the board. But the Washington Post headline reads, Jay-Z didn't sell out by dealing with the NFL. This is just how activism works. Again, that's the Washington Post. And then NPR, their headline reads, Jay-Z can't rock with the NFL unless Kaepernick gets a seat at the table. And then USA Today says that Jay-Z NFL partnership, per Colin Kaepernick, it sacrificed a business deal. So that's what we got. So let's go on and see what the one and only General Jeff has got to say. General Jeff, welcome to the show. Appreciate you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Huh?
Excuse me? Yes, I did.
Yeah,
I heard the clip, and there's a lot I have to say on this. And so, you know, for me, being born and raised from the streets of South Central Los Angeles, you know, if there's a situation where it's, you know, a conflict, you know, hey, we encourage a dialogue first. Even the same thing in the history of the world, when two countries have conflict and they're going to go to war, they send delegations to communicate first. And then if a conflict can't be resolved, then they declare war. I never heard where Jay-Z and Kaepernick had any dialogue prior to the announcement of this deal. And so that's where, like, the folks that I know in the black community are concerned. We don't want to hear from the NFL because, you know, we're still taking the knee. My timeline still got folks with the upcoming NFL season. They already saying they're prepared to take a knee with Kaepernick again. So that energy is still fresh and it's still, you know, active. And so, you know, we don't want to hear from the NFL. We want to hear from our people. We want to hear from Jay-Z. We don't want to hear from Kaepernick. And so, to me, Jay-Z should have released either a joint statement or go ahead and let the NFL get, like, you know, the first announcement, and then maybe an hour or two later release his own statement. We're trying to, because it came, it, just to interpret what happened from the NFL's perspective, we don't like what we hear. And so while, you know, so there are those of us that are standing with Kaepernick that are upset because Kaepernick is not mentioned anywhere, especially when it comes out that, you know, there's a social, you know, justice component to this. Well, that's what Kaepernick is fighting for. So why hasn't he brought it to the table? But then at the same time, Kaepernick may have taken a position like, I'm still an active quarterback. I can still, you know, play in the league. So I don't want to look like I'm retired and moving away from playing football to stay on the sidelines doing some stuff off the field. So, that, you know, that's a whole other conversation that, you know, that we don't know about. in terms of Jay-Z's position, now me being a West Coast hip-hop pioneer, this is a marvelous branding opportunity to expand his brand, because we talk about Super Bowl as the single biggest sporting event in the world. You know, nearly 300 countries around the world watch this single game sporting event. So now we're talking about halftime shows. We're talking about Jay-Z, you know, with advertisers coming in, spending, what is it, $2, $3 million for like 30-second spots. You know, Jay-Z would have a lot of influence and power over who goes and what doesn't go. And, I mean, there's a lot of opportunity to just to implement whatever his Roc Nation brand is into interject and then build up through the season. So, I mean, there's tremendous opportunities to expand Jay-Z's brand and Roc Nation brand around the world. So I get that from a capitalist businessman's perspective. But, again, the rollout was horrible. And so then – when we hear from, you know, Eric Reed, who was the first NFL player that took a knee next to Kaepernick, he came out and blasted Jay-Z. So that was when we, you know, we the community, we the black folks in America that's in the streets, when we stand, those that stand with Kaepernick, hey, man, this, you know, the guy that stood next, that took a knee next to Kaepernick, it blasted him. Then, you know, a report came out that Kaepernick had something negative to say. And it's like, so see, there's some dialogue that apparently didn't happen or needed to happen, or things weren't on one accord that we're upset about. And then Jay-Z hasn't spoken himself. It's like, exactly what does this social justice component mean? Is it just going to stop with, you know, just on the field in terms of the NFL? Because, you know, we have issues with this national anthem. What's going to happen with that? And, you know, there's protests about that. And so now, is it going to extend off the field? You know, in terms of where there's law enforcement and other issues in communities across America. So there's a lot that hasn't been said yet, and they're promoting this deal. And, you know, just like the professor said, you know, not only has, you know, we don't know the specifics. So there's a lot of dialogue that needs to happen, but, you know, it's still, you know, still unresolved issues. But I can see the positives on both sides. But, you know, we still don't know. It's inconclusive in terms of what's actually going to happen.
Right, General Jeff, 1 second, Professor Small. General Jeff, go on and introduce yourself briefly to our listening audience, and then Professor Smalls, I'll let you finish your thought, and then bring in the judge. I see him on the line.
Okay,
now.
My name is, for those that don't know, thank you, Ms. Valerie Denise Jones. My name is General Jeff. I'm born and raised in South Central Los Angeles. I am a first-generation West Coast hip-hop pioneer, which means when hip-hop started in the West Coast, I was there. I'm also currently, for the last 13 years, a community activist helping homeless folks in Skid Row, which is also in downtown Los Angeles, which is commonly known as the homeless capital of America. And my intro can go on for like another 5 minutes, but I'm just going to stop right there. So, as a matter of fact, I'll just say I'm also the chair of the Skid Row Neighborhood Council Formation Committee, as we're in the process of creating our own governing body to help ourselves out of homelessness in a do-for-self mindset. Thank you for having me.
Yes, definitely that. All right. Thank you so much for that introduction. Professor Smalls, please complete your thought go on and open
my
up the
comment was,
mic.
Yeah, and I thought the judge was right on point. They should have been, and that's been the thought in my head, some dialogue between Jay-Z and Kaepernick and some others. We don't know whether that happened, but it doesn't seem like that occurred. And I still think it's not too late for that kind of dialogue to take place.
Okay. All right. Many blessings. Thank you so much. All right. So at this time, I'd like to welcome our VIP, the one and only Judge Joe Brown himself. Welcome, welcome, sir, to the show. Your show.
How are you, Miss Valerie? I hope you're doing better today.
I am blessed. Hey, yes, always. I'm on this side of the earth, so praise God. Yeah. So I don't know. We've got General Jeff and Professor James Small on the line, and I don't know how much of the conversation you heard. I know
all
you heard
of
some
it.
Of us. Okay, all right.
I heard
all right.
All of
so,
it.
Yeah. Would you like to just go on and engage them, jump right on in? I'm going to fall
a
back and check the board.
A bit more than 2,000 years ago, Caius Julius Caesar, the great, when asked what he thought the Roman commoners were going to make of him being dictator for life, he should give them bread and circuses. In other words, keep them fed and entertained, and they won't give a damn. Now, this discussion has centered on, you know, something that is one of these circus-type things. It's a distraction, and I think it is a bad mistake for us as a people to give it any slight bit of attention. The very, very, very few of us who have the opportunity to get an economic stake through playing in athletics or sports or having had some kind of entertainment status, good for them. They have something going that most people don't even come anywhere close, but that does not make them worthy of being spokesmen for us. Now, being in entertainment is no excuse for a cop-out. That's crap. You can always get yourself a regular job and tell everybody to go to hell that's trying to get you to cop out. Now, Kaepernick did sacrifice. He gave up a lot. But it's still rather pathetic that the icons that we look up to for being our spokesman are athletes, that is, gladiators, entertainers, and whores. I refer to Kim Kardashian being consulted on prison reform. Now, one of these may have expertise independently of his or her celebrity. That was acquired independently or subsequently to the celebrity, but most don't. For us, the go-to person to discuss policy is one of the above. For whites, is always someone in the concerned field with a demonstrated expertise. They've written books. They are professors. They have taught. They have been leaders in that field. We go to somebody bouncing around on stage, clowning, trying to distract us, or some whore running around half naked to deal with what's got to be said from the black perspective. And we as a people allow that. Now, we still have one bad thing we've got to get around and move on from. We still haven't gotten around putting the preacher before the professor. Preachers don't get you anywhere except perhaps pacified for one more week of hell. But the professors are the ones that move things on, inspire folk to deal with the revolutions, come up with STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, and apply the same so that you can move on like China, Japan, Pakistan, India, Iran, North Korea is doing right now, South Korea, like the Philippines are doing, like the Euro Union's doing, like the U.S. has been doing, instead of being back-ass talking about nothing that's going to deal with the real modern world. Now, we have some big problems, and one of them is this fixation, and we're guilty on this show, too. We're always talking about, we've got some people that have been entertainers on right now, but they're doing something independently, and that's good. They're out there with the people trying to spread the word about doing the right thing so you can get to the right place with the right state of mind. But for the most part, it's just absolutely disgusting. Anytime something comes up, we go to somebody that's a rap artist. We go to somebody that's been toting a football, shooting a basketball. He probably grew up in a home with no daddy around, so he doesn't have any man training for the most part. They don't have any damn balls. You have two of the best liked athletes, one retired, one playing, who don't know what being a team player is and have no college education, and they're put up as a bad role model to all of those black youth who are out there talking about they want to be in the NBA. They're 18 and 5 feet seven talking about they want to be a pro basketball player instead of going to college. And then when you say you need to go to college, they say, well, look at so-and-so and so-and-so, these two I'm referring to. They didn't. Look how big they got. And what the hell are they doing? And meanwhile, back to the NFL thing with Jay-Z, for God's sake, are you forgetting Magic Johnson? He owns the Dodgers. He had a big stake of the Lakers, and he brought the Rams to L.A. And if you don't have any goddamn black history in your mind, understand this. The first black man to play in Major League Baseball was Jackie Robinson. He played with the Dodgers. He played football as a halfback in UCLA backfield and held the American NCAA record for a 100-yard dash in the 220. In the same backfield was Don Barstail. He was the wide receiver. He ran high hurdles and held the American record in the high hurdles. And he wound up playing basketball with the Lakers, first brother. He never played it before. Jackie Robinson never played football, baseball. Kenny Washington was the quarterback in the same UCLA backfield, and he became the first brother to play for the NFL with the Rams. So, I mean, you got the three teams that started this all off. You got a black man involved with him, and you don't give a damn about him. Nobody talks about him. But we talk about somebody that's airhead, basically, who's come into a hell of a lot of money because we buy into what Julius said 2,000-plus years ago. Give the fools bread and circuses, feed them and entertain their ass, and they won't care what anybody does to them. And that's what we are reduced to right now. See, so, I mean, I don't even get the relevance of discussing this other than saying it's a damn shame that we pay so much attention to it. It's an irrelevancy.
I agree.
And we got a Democratic Party, and there's not one son of a bitch running that's not either gay, lesbian, or deep into la-la land someplace and not even in Los Angeles to be there, which, by the way, some of you know is where I grew up, what they used to call South Central. But before that, when I was growing up, it hadn't yet acquired the name. Now they can't call it South Central because the city council is saying that's too damn unsavory. Too many bad connotations. And they haven't done a damn thing about helping the situation. So, I mean, we got a war we're in the middle of, and it's a cold war. It isn't hot like it used to be. I hear these young people talking, yeah, man, it's really moving. It is not. It looks dead. To me, it looks like the late 50s and early 60s before everything caught fire. Hopefully, before I drop dead, we'll get at least to the late 60s and get resurrected, motivated, and start doing something again. And I don't mean being civil rightsy, where you're down on your knees praying while some redneck is beating you across your head until some other redneck is feeling guilty about it. That is no struggle. That's only something for masochists to do while somebody's beating their ass. And it's an embarrassment. We need to fight. We need to stand up, and I can remember when I was with a D.C. think tank 50 years ago in Washington, I had to go through 60-some thousand pages of the Congressional Record researching the reasons behind the Civil Rights Act as amended, the Voting Rights Act, and what put itself into the 1964 original Civil Rights Act. There was 5 pages out of that that were devoted to civil rights demonstration. For 1964, they were concerned because those brothers coming out of the projects at the foot of that damn bridge in Selma kicked the police in the ass. You didn't see it if you lived in the South, and most of you are too young anyway, but if you're my age and you lived on the West Coast, you saw it. Those brothers whipped the police ass, and those cops were thinking about they were going to have some nice, polite, pagan church-going Negroes down on their knees singing that they could safely whip. Those brothers beat the dogs, killed some dogs, injured some police, and that scared the hell out of the congressional representation that had to do with the Civil Rights Act of 1964. In 1968 and with the Voting Rights Act, they were discussing all of that hell that went on in the inner city, 64, 65, and 66, where black folk just said, hell no, and they did as much damage as the Army Air Force did in Nazi Germany in World War II. And they said, we got to do something about this. And it's like reparations. Going around goddamn begging is a shame. I put it on Twitter. I said, reparations ought to be like trick or treat. You either treat us with reparations or you get one hell of a nasty trick. But most of us don't have the balls nor the stomach to deal with the trick. We aren't going to make one happen. We just go around and pray, get upset, and get to worry about, well, if they gave us reparations, it'd be all right. That is not going to be at all right, even if we could get it. And by the way, historically, we already had it. General Sherman, marching through Georgia, kicking a lot of behind, said, looky here, why don't we take and confiscate the property of these treasonous Johnny Rebs and give it to the former slaves? And he passed that on to General Grant, commander of the Union Army, who passed it on to Republican President Abe Lincoln, who said, good idea. As military commander-in-chief in the South being a war zone at the moment, I so declare. So they started confiscating the property of these Johnny Rebs who had all of these plantations, and they were given 40 acres and one mule to every black family. And if a black man got married, he could apply for his 40 acres and a mule. Well, for a few months, it was working fine. The Republican House and the Republican Senate said, good idea, let's fund it. And they did, and it was going great guns. And then Lincoln got assassinated, and that jerk Democrat Johnson from the state of Tennessee became president. And because the South was still considered a war zone and not yet part of the United States, they had no rights. So he issued, as commander-in-chief, an executive order that said, we are rescinding all of this, give them back their property. And that was our reparations way back 154 years ago. And we had it. We're too stupid to realize it. And we're sitting up here lighted out in the back pocket of the Democratic Party, who doesn't do a damn thing but seduce us for our votes so they can give Skittles folk something so they can taste the damn rainbow, which doesn't have a damn thing to do with us. We are so stupid. We just are predictable. We need to wise up, pay attention, read, get relevant, stop dealing with all of these distractions that they know we are so happy to absorb. Now, I mean, I've been listening to stupidity all damn week, and I've just had enough of it, and I don't want any more. For at least the next 24 hours. So, I mean, let me just opt out of this discussion because I'm just likely to say, excuse the term, believe it, this is full of shit. And, you know, big goddamn deal. You already got a black man that's a billionaire that knows what the hell he's doing business-wise and nobody pays attention to him, and you get a damn little distraction. Jay-Z, whatever his merits are, maybe he does something, but I haven't seen it demonstrated, and we get all freaked about this discussion that he's supposed to generate, and what the hell does he know about politics, sociology, getting down and getting a black movement started and doing what black men do, which is being willing to sacrifice every damn thing for the right cause. Kaepernick at least approached it, but the rest of these folks, they can go straight to hell. And me, I had the number one TV show, syndicated TV show in America, or number two, for quite a few years. For the last 5 years, I was beating Oprah every damn week, Phil every damn week, and half the week beat Judy. And nobody even knows that because they didn't want a black man to have that. I was the second highest paid person in television. And I said, go to hell because you're wrong. I didn't mind giving it up. When you get somebody that's willing to do that, I'll listen to them. Otherwise, these little jackleg bozo sambo, song dancing little step and fetch it fools can go do what they do, and they can have another organ grinder put them on a chain so they can dance and entertain the crowd. That's all I've got to say about it today, and that's enough, I think. Now, excuse me, but I had to vent on that.
Amen. Let the
and if I could jump on
amen.
In, you know, if I can jump in, and I just want to say that, yes, just yesterday on my timeline, it's unconfirmed, but I did see a couple of people share stories that Jay-Z had talked to Jermaine Dupri out of taking this very same NFL deal 2 years ago. And I thought that
General,
I had heard
General
that before.
Jeff, I'll talk to you behind the scenes. That was false.
Okay. And then also, too, I heard that Jay-Z is in line for ownership percentages in at least one NFL team that is being discussed behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think that clears up for that.
I agree with the judge pretty much. Like,
I came to the show, and this morning the young man told me what the topic was going to be, and I initially told him I had nothing to say on the topic because I think it is taking up too much space. There's so much other things that we need to deal with, and the relevancy of it, other than to deal with the issue of whether one brother disrespected and betrayed the position of another, and that's that dialogue, like I said, can still happen between those young men, but this should not be a national issue or a national question, because there's so many other things that we need to be doing right now while they're distracted with their Trump and their other stuff.
Right. And I want to make sure that I have, I asked the panel, the two of you, what you would like to introduce and what you'd like people to take away from the conversation. Judge, if you don't mind, I'd like to shift gears and talk about another billionaire, because this is another trending topic. But this one is a little more positive yet negative. It's about a minute long, and when we come back, we'll talk, and then we're going to wrap and get to your final thoughts.
Possible. All right, folks, Byron Allen, the CEO of Entertainment Studios, suing Comcast and Charter Communications for $20 billion for racial discrimination. He claims that the companies wouldn't carry his networks or even meet with him because Entertainment Studio is a 100% minority-owned company. He also says the networks are in violation of the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which prohibits racial discrimination in contracting. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear the case on November 13th, and if Allen wins, it would be a major victory for black-owned companies and black media as well. Now, what's quite interesting about this is that this week, the Trump Department of Justice actually filed a brief siding with Comcast in this whole deal. So, according to this brief that they actually put out, the Department of Justice, they are arguing that Byron Allen needs to prove that race is the specific reason as to why he has been denied an opportunity to actually have his networks on Comcast. He has blasted the DOJ, blasted their interference as well. He said this is about enslavement. Pretty interesting. Let's talk about this, of course, with our panel.
All right, guys, that's it. You're listening to the Judge Joe Brown Show. I'm Valerie. Denise Jones. Okay, sir.
I know that low life, that wrongdoing scoundrel, Byron Allen, he's a, that whole thing is a setup. He's front for CBS. I know it. I meet with their executives. That's shyster that tried to set me up with contract violation with CBS by using their precise language to put me in a contract with him to do make-believe reenactments of court cases rather than the real thing. And what the deal is CBS trying to corner the black rerun market. So they fronted off Byron Allen, financed the whole damn thing, and he was pushing for them. So that is a fake. And what he did is he went in and filed this lawsuit so CBS backing him to get the goodies. He ain't nothing but a punk Negro. And I tell him that to his damn face with the lowdown scheme he tried to trap me into. That is
wow,
off, and he's no damn billionaire. He couldn't even pay what he was supposed to be pay as an initial agreement on this proposed contract he had with me. He couldn't come up with the money. So screw that. He's no damn billionaire. He's just a hustler. Like so many of us are putting off away, folks. Now,
I just
got that crap in the bud. He's a fake. And I saw him with my own two eyes meeting with the mob group. Said, you see that? I said, I look. Can you hear this? And we watched it. And he was plotting that shit, that stuff with CBS to go make that damn move. So it ain't got nothing to do with black folk. It's got to do with CBS, one of the biggest collection of lying, low-down scoundrels you can find.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for the insight.
Now, that's the witness stuff. That's source.
General Jeff or Professor Small, would you like to say anything to that before we got about 20 more minutes.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, the judge is one of my heroes, and I know his integrity. I've watched him through the years, and he is an insider speaking to us novice who don't even know that industry. So he's just enlightened me. Even I didn't pay much attention. You see it blipped up on the screens on the computer every now and then. I was too busy trying to do some black business to pay attention to what that Byron stuff is about. And knowing how that the system works, what he was being purported couldn't have been, because he, being an individual, wouldn't have been able to make that kind of move. So I thank you, Judge, for that enlightenment.
The low-down scoundrel.
Thank you. Thank you so much. General Jeff, because I want to get some updates from you guys and find out what it is that you'd like to discuss. General Jeff?
Well, just, you know, to end on this topic, I just want to say that I'm just going to defer to Judge Joe Brown. He's privy to a lot more information than I am, and he's standing firm in his position, and I respect that as such. As far as the topics that I want to talk about, my number one topic is Skid Row and homelessness. So just let me know when you want to dive into that if we have time.
All right, definitely so. Judge, would you like to give us a final thought, and then I'm going to toss it back to them and find out what business they've been up to. So give us a final thought as it relates to the two topics that I threw at you.
Well, I like the one, that people are down and out. And that, by the way, last time, brother, you gave us an explanation of what Skid Row is with that logging thing. I'd really never heard an explanation of how they came up with the name. But it is important, and I had a lifetime friend I went to high school with, and he died last year. And he devoted the last 20 years of his life to working with the brothers that were, well, everybody that was down and out. And there's another lifetime friend that's still trying to help out like you. I ask you if you knew them, but, you know, so I'm all ears.
All right, so we will divide the last 20 minutes up and give you guys about 10 or, you know, 10 to 15 minutes each. I know that's not equivalent to 20. Sorry, about 10 minutes each before we shift gears and do a little promo. But so I don't know if it's an awkward transition, being that we were just talking about Skid Row, but Professor Small, since I had you on first, I'd like to go on and talk about your business, and then General Jeff, I will give you the final 10 minutes to discuss Skid Row.
Okay, thank you.
Well,
my business, I won't even take 10 minutes. I'm along with 80 other African Americans. We invested in a hotel 14 years ago in West Africa, Cape Coast, Ghana, to be exact. And we were able to, without any bank loans, of course, because they weren't going to give us a loan to buy any properties in Africa as a business. So through our mortgages and our savings, we raised $1 million in 2 years, and we bought and paid for the facility and got a 60-year lease on the property. And we went through a lot, the crash in 08, the near crash in 2010, and then the Holy Ebola scare, which drove many people out of business, but we were able to hang in there. And what I've just returned from West Africa, and I've negotiated a partnership with a fully Ghanaian-owned hotel chain, Accra City, who's going to come in for a certain amount of equity. And we also secured a partnership with the Ghana Tourism Authority to come in as our partners. So we are hoped to be back up as a 3-star deluxe by December. And the project we wanted to make money, but we also wanted to make that bridge of connection between the West African coast and the African Americans here in the United States. And I think we've been successful at both at this moment. We are in the final stages of our merger with the Accra City Hotel and the Ghana Tourism Authority. We've also contracted with Sunseeker Tours, the second largest tour company in Ghana, as a certain percentage equity partner so that we can supply the bodies and guarantee ourselves that business. And hopefully we have a number of things that's addendum to this hotel. We have an agreement with Cape Coast University. We want to bridge them in, and we want to be the conduit that bridges them in to the African University, African American universities here in America. And that's coming along well. We have the largest convention center in the city of Cape Coast, and that's playing a big part in our long-distance education project. That's a part of the hotel project. So that's what I'm working on. It's called the Sana Lodge, S-A-N-A-A Lodge, in Cape Coast, Ghana, as well as my work, you know, back here working with WADU and the World African Diaspora Union with Dr. Jeffries, and also working on the Malcolm X Project, which I've done for 53 years. And on his birthday, it'll be May 19th, at his gravesite, and that's it. But our business, the hotel project, is a major project, continuing Malcolm's legacy, and working just to educate our people where we can as a part of a team that Dr. Leonard Jeffries leads up, and just continue. I want to hear more about the Skid Row situation. We deal in a lot of things in the street with the homeless here in New York, but I want to hear more from someone who has put so much time into it as the general has.
Right. Now, Professor Small,
hey, brother,
is there
social
media?
I'm impressed, brother.
Yes.
Now, that's what I'm talking about.
Yes,
there you go.
Been,
yes, sir.
Well, you want to be clear, and this is not pushing up. You are one of my heroes, sir. You are one of my heroes.
Well, thank you, sir.
And
you're one of mine
very
now.
Important. So,
you're one of mine now.
Yes. I just took down my website, sister. We're reorganizing it, but it's called jamessmallafricanworld.com. We should be back up and running in another 2 weeks.
Any social media?
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on the Instagram. I don't put too much into those because when I watch it, I don't see nothing really, not too much relevancy except people having a silly little conversation. Facebook, I'm able to do more messaging, even knowing who they are in terms of their connections with the intelligence networks of the world. But there are certain things we can do despite that, you know, and, you know, with my background, I come out of Malcolm's shop as a youth. So I come with a kind of a sense of who we're dealing with all the time. And upon his leaving us, you know, I became the minister over that mosque at 21 years old. So I come out of a different kind of a world. And so I think the biggest thing for me is the communications. I lecture around the country. I work with educational groups. I work with brothers and sisters in the street. I work with the young hip-hoppers here in New York to try to get a message to our people to let them know that economic politics and culture are the essential areas we have to develop. And let's start to do it by whatever way we are able to develop economically, politically, and culturally. Not one without the other. The three must go together.
Thank you. Appreciate that. All right, Professor Smalls, thank you so much. And just a real quick, in one or two sentences, what would you like people to take away from your presentation today? What is the message that you definitely want to drive home, if you could do that in a few sentences?
Make sure we do our research before we start these conversations, before we condemn people, before we criticize people, even before we elevate people. Let's do the research that we have to do. Let's get the history. Let's get the background so that when we make statements, it has some validity to it. That seems to be the most important thing, since we're using all of this technology to communicate on a daily basis, and we communicate so much false stuff that if we spend more time doing the research, doing the study, gaining a foundation in history, Dr. Nova said history will erase the mystery, really getting a foundation in your history and learning how to research any topic before you go on the internet and begin to make statements and having these blog shows and all these other things that spread a lot of false information and a lot of confusion. So do your research, do your study, give yourself a historical foundation about your people.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. And to General Jeff, I'd like to extend
like
the same
this.
Invitation.
I'm sorry, excuse me?
Yes, General Jeff, it's your turn. Thank you, Professor Small.
You're welcome.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you, Professor. That was a really great job.
Thank you,
sir. Thank you. And now, in regards to, you know, my efforts in Skid Row, you know, last time I was on, I mentioned Congresswoman Maxine Waters having a $13 billion bill that she was putting forth, that she was proposing, that would help address all of homelessness in America. But what I didn't have, now I want to share the information, is H.R. The bill's name is H.R. 1856, 1856. It's called the Ending Homelessness Act, and that's going through the House Financial Services Committee, of which Maxine Waters is the chair. And so we're talking about a brand new $13 billion funding pot that could potentially address a lot of issues of homelessness across America. And so the problem, what we have on the boots on the ground, is that you know, it's going to go to the poverty pimps. So what we already described last time I was on is the poverty pimps, you know, the nonprofits, the service providers, along with the politicians and law enforcement and many other agencies that are all creating jobs and getting paid without actually helping the people. And so just last week, Congresswoman Maxine Waters had a town hall meeting, what they call a field hearing, where they had many, many speakers, three different panels. The featured panel was included Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, and they're just pushing out this empty, worthless rhetoric that you know, we're pretty much sick and tired of. And for example, by the Los Angeles Homeless Services Association, LASA, they released their Skid Row specific homeless count numbers, and within their numbers, you can go to their website to get all of the information, but within their numbers, they said in Skid Row they counted 1,600 women were homeless, and they said 900 of them were unsheltered. And now, to combat that, they just launched 2 weeks ago a brand new solution supported by the mayor's office, where they created a shelter that has 25 new shelter beds. And so then, if we're talking about 1,600 women, how in the hell is it an effective solution to only come up to house 25 women? And so, you know, those are the type of futile solutions that we, us activists on the streets, you know, are just sick and tired of. And so also, the numbers came out where leading analysts analyzed, in terms of real estate, the new numbers came out that the way the low-income affordable housing developers are charging, they say it costs $700,000 per unit to build units for low-income housing, formerly homeless folks. $700,000 per unit. And it's like, for that much money, you can actually buy a loft that already exists and just give the people the keys and get them off the street. And so, that, you know, clearly the fix is in. There's a lot that's, you know, not being discussed. And so that's why I really appreciate, you know, the Judge Joe Brown Show for allowing me to come on and speak. Also, you know, what's going on through the city of Los Angeles, the Department of City Planning, they have what they're called, this program called the DTLA 2040 Project, where they anticipate, they're saying right now there are 70,000 people that live in downtown Los Angeles, and by the year 2040, they want to double that capacity to 140,000 folks. And so, of course, downtown Los Angeles also includes Skid Row. And so what the Department of City Planning, DCP, what they're doing is they're carving up Skid Row and rezoning it to where there's less low-income affordable housing, and there's more opportunities for luxury lofts to be developed. And so, you know, we're fighting and highly upset because we need to get the people housed that are living on the sidewalks. and now they're already rezoning. They're attempting to rezone. They just released the draft last month, and they're already the city's trying to rezone Skid Row in the direction of luxury lofts and condos. And so, you know, there's a serious it's unfair, but we have to fight for everything we want. And so that's why, as the chair. Me being the chair of the Skid Row Neighborhood Council Formation Committee, we're in the process of still suing the city of Los Angeles to create our own governing body so we can not only have our own seat at their table, but we want to have our own table and then invite them to come to our table. And so we're in the process of doing that. And, of course, it's an uphill struggle, but we feel very confident about the documents that we're about to file in court, and then we'll share them publicly within the next 30 days. And just so the listeners understand, and when we talk about Skid Row, it's 50 city blocks, and per Los Angeles Homeless Service Authority's numbers compiled, released this year in 2019, Skid Row is 62% African-American, and with 76% of that being male. And so we're talking, there's a high concentration of black male that are homeless and in Skid Row and in need of housing. And you know, even if you're living in a mission or a shelter, they're still considered homeless per HUD regulations. And as we all know, HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, is run in Washington, D.C. now by Dr. Ben Carson. And so we've recently had the United Nations come to Skid Row. We've got an organization in Skid Row called the Los Angeles Community Action Network, a grassroots nonprofit, L.A. CAN. And they're connected with the United Nations, and the United Nations has sent several special rapporteurs to do reports on boots on the ground in terms of what's going on in Skid Row. And again, you know, as long as homelessness continues to exist, and it's not just in Skid Row, but it's across America, as long as homelessness continues to exist, that means that automatic creates jobs for the nonprofit sector. And so in Washington, D.C., you know, the focus is all about creating jobs. So in the terms of homelessness, you know, it's more important to create jobs than to actually end homelessness, even though the marketing schemes and the messaging says differently. And so that's something, that's just a sample of some of the things that we're fighting up against. And again, I'll be happy to, you know, go anytime, any place, anywhere and talk about this. But thank you for having me on your show.
Hey.
Definitely.
Glad to have you.
Website or any social media link to the project?
Well, as far as the Skid Row Neighborhood Council, it's real simple. The Skid Row Neighborhood Council.com. Spelled out all the way out. Skid Row Neighborhood Council.com. Thank you.
All right. General Jeff, do you have any like personal accounts or anything that you'd like to shout out before we shift gears?
Well, sure. I'm on Facebook at General Jeff. I'm on Twitter at Go Skid Row Go. I'm on Instagram at Skid Row General Jeff. And those that you can contact me directly.
Thank you. I forgot to do this earlier, but Professor Smalls, General Jeff, would you guys, do you have anything you'd like to say to each other? Because I totally forgot to do that.
Well, oh, well, Professor Small speaking. I'm impressed with this young man, and I've got your information, and I have a lot of people out in L.A., so I'm going to be waking them up to come and give you assistance as best we can. And I'm back and forth out there, so the next time I'm there, I'll give you a heads up in advance, and I'd like to come, you know, and see the work that you're doing and see how we can help.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so General Jeff, same thing for you real quick. We got about a minute or so. What would you like for people to take away from your presentation today?
Well, you know, there are two sides. Thank you. There's Ms. Valerie Denise Jones. There's two sides to every story. And what's constantly being portrayed through the mainstream media is the one side slanted story that favors the powers that be. You know, we the people of Skid Row, we the people of the streets, we the people of the community, we, you know, have a lot in common with the same, you know, for the people, of the people, and by the people, the principles that this country is founded on. We have our own side of the story, and it's unfortunate that a lot of decisions are being made without our input. You know, anywhere in America, if any before any decisions are finalized, you know, the local residents are asked for, you know, the community input. They also have to give reports on community impact. Just yesterday, I was at the hearing, state hearing for a brand new business, a restaurant that's once that's opened in Skid Row, and they want to serve alcohol. And so at the hearing, we're protesting that. Because, you know, we have a lot of folks that are substance abuse victims in our community. And during the hearing, the Department of Alcohol Beverage Control, ABC, their representative said that they don't consider homeless people as residents. And it's in their language in terms of their documentation. And so with Skid Row being a majority homeless community, they don't validate our voice, as they basically said during the hearing, that our voice doesn't matter. And so, there's, again, we're trying to get our side of the story out and add it to the conversation, and it's just an uphill battle if they don't even acknowledge that we exist and that we our voice matters. And so there's a lot more fighting to this. And, again, we appreciate Judge Joe Brown. We appreciate all the listeners to, you know, contact us directly and support with and connect with us as we keep fighting for not only for us but for people, homeless folks, and less fortunate folks all across America and around the world.
Thank you, Judge. We're about to shift gears and talk about the African Union Ambassador Conference call. So, got that. I see one of the panelists is on the board. But would you like to say anything to General Jeff or Professor Smalls before we cut to commercial?
Gentlemen, I appreciate what you've been doing. Please keep it up.
Thank you,
thank
sir.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your strength and tenacity as well. You know. Absolutely.
Yes, sir. You've been a powerful example on how to stand.
Thank you.
Awesome. I'd like to applaud both of you. Thank you.
The Judge Joe Brown Show, presented by Valerie Denise Jones. Uncensored truth with a legal twist. Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 929-477-1167. Or visit MissValerieDeniseJones.com for details. Want to know more about big media? Tune in every Tuesday and Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget to subscribe to our channels.